You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Greetings to all the tribes of Israel who are the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, and Nordic peoples, our brothers and sisters around the world. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a day I've been waiting for. Let me take a sip of coffee. The title of this message is A Trip Down the Yellow Brick Road. Now, I spent a good deal of time last night watching this movie, but not from an entertainment value. I took notes all the way through and wrote an article that will feature many pictures and will explain to you many things of the movie. Right after the show, I'll get that article up on davidjamesboston.com, and perhaps I'll put it on EFR as well. I think you're going to really like this. I always say that, don't I? Well, I do like it, you know what I mean? Because it shows you what's been going on for so long. It's funny how people don't come to the realization of things until 50 years later after the Jews have tricked people. I mean, this is much longer than 50. This is closer to, it's getting close to 100, but not quite that much yet. However, this movie was used not only in mind control, it was used to shape future generations. It was used as a weapon against Christianity, against Yahweh, and against the white American people. However, even I dearly think that this movie is dear to me in some form of fashion, maybe because it's done well and it's got some very interesting things going on in it. As the film starts, you may not have realized what it says here. It says, for nearly 40 years, this story has given faithful service to the young in heart. And time has been powerless to put its kindly philosophy out of fashion. You know, wait till you see what that means. What is this philosophy? What is this kindly philosophy that has not been able to be put out of fashion, that's directed to the young in heart? Well, I'm young in heart. Are you, dear listener? And it continues and says, to those of you who have been faithful to it in return, and to the young in heart, we dedicate this picture. L. Frank Baum was a theosophist. I will tell you right up front here, that Dorothy's slippers were not ruby, they were silver in the book. And this was about many things on many levels. Yes, it was about theosophy, but it was also about the money system in America, the yellow brick road being gold. When Dorothy and her companions showed up at the Emerald City gate, she was let in because of her ruby slippers, but actually in the book they were silver. So it's discussing the silver and gold standard as well. But let's find out what theosophy is. Definition of theosophy: teaching about God and the world based on mystical insight. often capitalized. The teachings of a modern movement originating in the United States in 1875 and following chiefly Buddhist and Brahmanic theories, especially of pantheistic evolution and reincarnation. Sounds very much like the God we know about, right? I think not. It says in the Bible, it is appointed for man once to die, and after this, the judgment. That rabbi Jew I was telling you about that said they came from another planet, he was saying that the Jews were being also corrected, and they were going to correct us. But what that meant was every time you died, you came back until you were corrected. Reincarnation. So that this isn't, when it says teaching about God and the world based on mystical insight, it certainly isn't talking about Yahweh. Theosophy, a cult movement originating in the 19th century with roots that can be traced to Gnosticism and Neoplatonism. The term theosophy, derived from the Greek theos, God, with a little g, and Sophia, wisdom, is generally understood to mean divine wisdom. Forms of this doctrine were held in antiquity by the Manichaeans, an Iranian dualist sect, and in the Middle Ages by two groups of dualist heretics, the Bogomils in Bulgaria and the Byzantine Empire and the Cathari in southern France and Italy. In modern times, theosophical views have been held by the Rosicrucians. You know who they are. They're the sisters to sister group to the Freemasons. And the Rosicrucians were the first scientists. They were the first ones that were doing the things in labs and so on and so forth. And also by speculative Freemasons, it says here. The International New Age movement of the 1970s and 80s originated among independent theosophical groups in the United Kingdom. Beliefs. The various forms of theosophical speculation have certain common characteristics. The first is an emphasis on mystical experience. Theosophical writers hold that there is a deeper spiritual reality and that direct contact with that reality can be established through intuition, meditation, revelation, or some other state transcending normal human consciousness. Hello. Theosophists also emphasize esoteric doctrine. Modern theosophists claim that all the world's religions contain such an inner teaching, and much attention is devoted to deciphering the meaning concealed in sacred texts. In addition, most theosophical speculation reveals a fascination with supernatural or other extraordinary occurrences and with the achievement of higher psychic and spiritual powers. Theosophists maintain that knowledge of the divine wisdom gives access to the mysteries of nature and humankind's inner essence. Finally, theosophy plays a characteristic preference for pluralism and monism. The view that reality is constituted of one principle or substance, such as mind or spirit. Although theosophists recognize the basic distinctions between the phenomenal world and a higher spiritual reality, and between humans and the divine, which suggests dualism. Yes, the Freemasons are into dualism, and so is the Kabbalah. That's what it's all about. Equilibrium in Freemasonry is one of the key words. That's your trestle board, your chessboard, your black and white floor. That's equilibrium. Same thing as dualism. In the Kabbalah, you must, if you do evil, you must do just as much good. Okay, so most theosophists also affirm an overarching, all-encompassing unity that subsumes, I've never heard that word, all differentiation. Associated with their monism are the beliefs that God is utterly transcendent and impersonal, that creation is the product of spiritual emanations from God, and that humans are spark of the divine trapped in the material world who desire to return to their spiritual home. Hello, did Dorothy want to go home? See, there's underlying things here. Yes, she wanted to go home to the farm, yes. We'll find out at the end what the whole thing is all about. It's just what I told you. I will tell you what theosophy is. One aspect of it is the fact that you don't need any outside force. Remember, I just did a teaching on this several weeks ago called the, I forget what it was called, The Sermons of Hollywood is what it was called. And it was about a movie that I had watched. Well, what it means is, you don't need God. You don't need Him to be righteous. You don't need His advice. You don't need His wisdom. You don't need any outside force. It's all within you. That the divine spark is in with all of us. Within all of us. And all you have to do is tap into it. All you have to do is look in your own backyard. All the answers you need are within you. That's what theosophy is all about. That's just one of the aspects. So, the history of theosophy. The contemporary theosophical movement was born with the founding of the Theosophical Society in New York City. Yeah, what more? You know, out of New York City has come so much garbage and swill. No wonder the black fella there, Jesse Jackson, called it Hymie Town. In 1875, the Theosophical Society was created by Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. I'm sure you've heard of her. She loves Lucifer. 1831 to 1891. Henry Steele Olcott, 1832 to 1907, and William Quan Judge, 1851 to 1896. A Russian aristocrat, Blavatsky immigrated to the United States in 1873 after many years of travel and study in Europe and in the Middle East. Olcott, an American lawyer, that's wonderful, he fits right along with her, newspaper man and student of spiritualism, a 19th century movement based on the belief that the living can contact the dead, which is forbidden by Yahweh, right? Didn't Solomon do that? Soon fell under her sway. This man soon fell under her sway and became the society's president in 1875. They moved to India in 1878, eventually settling in Adyar near Madras, which still serves as the international headquarters of the society. Branch societies were established throughout India and in the major cities of Europe and North America. A second organization, the Esoteric Section of the Theosophical Society, was established in London in 1888 to practice occultism and to facilitate the movement of the society's members to a higher level of consciousness. See, intellectualism, the promise from the garden, Lucifer's promise in the garden. If you eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shall be like gods, knowing good and evil. Now, I don't have to say anything about fruit. They like to keep calling it fruit because they want you to think it was an apple. But you know better than that now if you listen to the last show. And I've told you it many times as well. So, let's see what it says. Blavatsky also wrote the two-volume Isis Unveiled, 1877. The Secret Doctrine, also in two volumes, 1888. And other works that are recognized as classic expositions of the theosophical doctrine. She talks much about Lucifer in there, believe me. It's amazing. These filthy demons that come out of the woodwork. The basic goals of the Theosophical Society are enunciated in the so-called three objects. Now listen. To form a nucleus of the universal brotherhood of humanity. Is that not what they're doing today? Is the Pope not going over trying to bring all the religions together? Are they not trying to mix us all together until there is no difference between us? Listen, as it goes on, get it again now. These are the basic goals of the Theosophical Society, and you know that it's more than them, all right? Here's another arm of the octopus or head of the Hydra. So it's done in the so-called three objects. Here it is. Listen carefully now. To form a nucleus of the universal brotherhood of humanity, without distinction of, listen carefully, race, creed, sex, caste, or color. To encourage the study of comparative religion, philosophy, and science. I told you science is at enmity with God, did I not? And is not religion at enmity with God? And isn't much of philosophy at enmity with God? Oh, yes, it is. See, science is at enmity with God, not for creating cures. I'm not talking about things like that. Right now, science is involved in hybridism. Science is involved in trying to open doors over there in, is it Sweden or Switzerland? They're trying to open the gates and let the demons in. Science is also part of NASA, where these evil people say that NASA is part of these people in the background. They're trying to find a way to get the devil off the planet. The devil has been put on this planet by Yahweh and is not allowed to leave here. So the NASA, in my view, and I believe it's absolutely 100% true, because all evil people were interested in NASA. I believe there's a Hebrew word that NASA means snake, or something to that effect. Also, I told you about Jack Parsons, the follower of Aleister Crowley, the follower of Michael Aquino, the devil worshiper, who kills children. Jack Parsons was working on a project called the Golem. He was blown up in his own lab. Praise be to Yahweh. Yes, science is at enmity with the Father in heaven. Science, I told you that not only are the Rosicrucians the first scientists, but I also told you that science, the Pharisees, were the scientists of their day. They wanted to see a sign. They did not want to believe and have faith. They wanted a sign. Science is like that as well. Everything has to be proven to them. There is no such thing as faith. So, and the last thing is to investigate unexplained laws of nature. Unexplained. Like as if Yahweh hasn't explained the laws of nature and the powers latent in human beings. In pursuing these objectives, the society has been a major conduit for Eastern teachers moving to the West and a starting point for many occult teachers and movements. Although the movement enjoyed some early success, ladies and gentlemen, a question I would have for you, have you ever heard of the Theosophical Society? I'll bet you some that are listening have, but I'll bet you some of you haven't, which shows you you're not aware of your world. You don't know what's going on around you and what has been going on around you and before you. Although the movement enjoyed some early success, it suffered after Blavatsky became the focus of a major controversy. She claimed to be in regular contact with a brotherhood of great masters, hello, or adepts, who she asserted had perfected themselves and were directing the spiritual evolution of humanity. Now remember, Alice Bailey's book, The Externalization of the Hierarchy. She's also a follower of this Blavatsky character, and that's who the hierarchy is. Not only is it the physical Jews in our world, but it's these evil spirits, these demons. See, what she said is she claimed to be in regular contact with a brotherhood of great masters or adepts who, she asserted, had perfected themselves and were directing the spiritual evolution of humanity. So this man who follows this movement is writing children's books. There are many more books than The Wizard of Oz. And so now they put this into a movie to brainwash your children, to shape the next generation. Wait till you see what I'm going to tell you in the near future here. Let's move along. In 1844, a former employee and confidant accused her of faking the extraordinary phenomena and that accompanied the reception of some messages from the masters. That claim was investigated by William Hodgson, a member of the Society for Psychical... psychical research in London, who concluded that the accusations were true. His report blunted the progress of the Theosophical Society for the rest of Blavatsky's life. Despite this setback, Blavatsky continued to make converts. While in England, 1897, she met the prominent British atheist leader Annie Besant, 1847-1933, who converted to Theosophy and placed her organizational and oratorical skills at the society's disposal. When Blavatsky died 4 years later, Besant succeeded her as head of the esoteric section. Judge, who had led the American branch of the society while Blavatsky and Olcott were in India, felt slighted at Besant's appointment and led the American branch out of the international body. After Judge's death in 1896, Catherine Tingley, 1847-1929, succeeded to the leadership of the Theosophical Society in America. At her instigation, the American headquarters were transferred to Point Loma, San Diego in California, where a large community thrived for almost half a century. Tingley's successor, Gottfried de Perucker, 1874-1942, oversaw the sale of the property and the movement of the society's headquarters to a Los Angeles suburb. This branch of the movement subsequently declined and, at the end of the 20th century, only a few chapters remained. Olcott maintained uneasy control over the international movement in the decade following Blavatsky's death. At Olcott's death in 1907, he was succeeded by president by Besant, who led the International Society for the next quarter century. During this time, the Society experienced its greatest success, and Besant made it welcome in India by her support of Indian nationalism and her founding of numerous schools. She traveled and lectured widely and authored numerous books and articles which contain useful introductions to theosophical belief. Among Besant's close associates was the Reverend Charles Webster Leadbeater. Now, I have talked to you and read you right out of Leadbeater's book. How when you become the 33rd degree, you are linked with the spiritual king of the world. And how in his book also, it's called The Hidden Life in Freemasonry. I suggest you take a look at it. He talks about how when you go up and you're seeking light in Freemasonry, every degree you are given another helper to come and live either with or inside of you. And that you are to look at that as a brother worker in the light, so to speak. Didn't George Norrie write a book called Workers in the Light or Worker in the Light? Impressed by the aura he perceived from Jiddu Krishnamurti, 1895 to 1986, an obscure Indian youth, Leadbeater convinced Besant that Krishnamurti was the coming world teacher, the messianic figure proclaimed by the esoteric section. Besant educated and promoted Krishnamurti, and in the 1920s toured the world with him. But in 1929, Krishnamurti suddenly resigned from his designated role and broke with the society. Membership plunged, and the organization never returned to its earlier strength. Krishnamurti began a career as an independent writer and teacher. In 1930, he made the first of several annual tours through India and the United States and Europe, where his books and lectures became quite popular. He also founded several schools. His teachings are preserved and disseminated by the Krishnamurti Foundation, which has branches throughout the world. And so, just to finish this off before we move on with the Wizard of Oz. See, I just want you to know what theosophy is. I wanted you to know that it is in opposition to Yahweh. And yet this is a children's movie that they are being indoctrinated into this kind of thought. Indoctrinated into witchcraft. Oh, yes, it is. So the assessment, despite its relatively small membership, the Theosophical Society has been very influential. The Society not only pioneered the promotion of Eastern thought in the West, hello, but also inspired the creation of more than 100 esoteric religious movements, including, now listen, the Alice Bailey movement, the Arcane School, the I Am movement, oh yes, the Church Universal and Triumphant, and the Liberal Catholic Church. I will remind you about one more thing about Alice and her husband, Foster Bailey, is that they come from the UN, an organization in the UN that used to be known as Lucifer Publishing Company. And they've published many, many books. I believe they're both dead now. Now it's called Lucius Trust. I'm sure you must have heard of Lucius Trust. And if you ever hear the spokeswoman that speaks on it, you can tell she's a mental midget. And you can tell that she is whacked out. She sounds like a lot of our liberals, only she has a softer voice. Most of our liberal women speak deeper than men, like Hillary Clinton. or Hillary Clinton? So, let's go back one more time and read this quote from the beginning of the movie. For nearly 40 years, this story has given faithful service to the young in heart, and time has been powerless to put its kindly philosophy out of fashion. To those of you who have been faithful to it, in return, and to the young in heart, we dedicate this picture. What do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Okay, at the beginning of the film, Dorothy comes back from school and finds everybody is too busy working on the farm. She talks about the dog, you know, she goes by this Elvira or Elmira Gulch character who becomes the witch later. She's a hook-nosed Jewess. And Toto gets into her garden and she hit Toto with a rake and all this kind of stuff. And so Dorothy's trying to tell everybody on the farm that this has happened and so on and so forth. We notice that the color of the film is dull. I thought it was actually black and white, and it is to a point. See, you can take black and white pictures and you can just put a one certain color over the top of it and blend it in. That's basically what it is. So the color of the film is dull. It's kind of like a duotone in a sense. The color of the film, just not... you could see that the cow was black and white, yet the color of the film was a burnt color, like a very maroonish color over the whole thing. Not quite duotone. So the color of the film is dull and dreary, representing life on the farm. This is part of the lure from the Jew in the city. The man who plays the scarecrow gives her a solution to the problem. You know, she tells him the problem with Toto, and he says, well, why not just not walk by her house anymore, and then you won't have that problem? But, of course, just like our people, you know, many times people will come to me and complain and they'll say something and I'll give them a solution to the problem that they're having. But it's always fluffed off because they really didn't want a solution to the problem. They wanted to complain about it and have it heard. Our people are funny that way, but that's the way it is. I'm sure you're laughing to yourself right now because you know exactly what I'm talking about. One other thing I would mention, the farm had pigs on it, and this was something they were promoting heavily at the time. I remember on the old radio shows, there was one of these series in which they promoted the pig in the beginning of the series. They defended it. They knew that the public, for the most part, was against touching the pig, against eating the pig. And yet, they defended it, turned it around, and made a commercial promoting it. One day I'll play it for you because I'll find it again. But the pig has been promoted for quite some time now in our society. And that was a time when people weren't eating pig. Remember when you were younger, and even today, they still promote the pig. It's that other white meat. See, they have to promote the pig. Very interesting, is it not? Now listen to this also. I noticed that there are almost no examples of men at the farm, which alludes to the lure as well. You see, at this time, what I was telling you before in shows past is Yahweh gave us the farm as a protection. I know to some of you this is a repetition, but this is where it belongs, and so I must repeat it here. The farm gave you fresh organic food. The farm gave you a home. The farm made it so that you didn't need to work for a Jewish company. You worked on your farm to live. The farm was a protection for the community against the federal government encroaching in on their trades. The farm was a protection in case things went wrong in the world, in case of disaster. You see, today, you and I are dependent on the supermarket. If there should be some kind of a major problem, if we were on a farm, we'd have plenty of eggs, milk, corn, whatever it might be. But today, once the supermarket is emptied, where will you turn then? See, we're islands apart from one another as well. And so back in those times with the farm, all families relied on each other. It was a good thing. It kept the people together. You would trade with your neighbor, and there were no taxes on it. If he was great at making lettuce, and you were great at making corn, you made trades. You didn't have to pay big prices for organic food, because you already had organic food. You already had the best of the best. And you didn't need to keep your mouth shut, to be deprived of your free speech, or else you would lose your job. On the farm, if you wanted to express whatever you wanted, you express it. That's it. See, now you're in a Jewish corporation, and they're telling you either you shut your mouth, toe the line, let us do the thinking. Don't say anything out of line with what we want you to. We trained you that in the indoctrination of college and high school. We told you what not to say. We told you that all we're interested in you believing is the Holocaust, and you will defend that with your life. So, this is why the Jews got themselves into the big cities. They didn't actually build the big cities. Of course, we built everything. And the city wasn't a concentration of evil in the beginning. However, the Jew set themselves up in the cities. And they begin to make the cities attractive. And they begin to try to lure the people, the young people from the farms. They knew they wanted to get the control of the food. They wanted to get those farms as well, because they knew it was a protection to the people. Like I told you before, one of the first things they did when the Bolshevik Jews went into Russia is they took the farms away from the people. The farms are a protection, ladies and gentlemen. So, this movie is showing you that the farm is a dull place to be. It's for simpletons. Who would want to work all day? This is what, you know, Dorothy comes home and everybody's working. Everybody had work to do. And she's trying to tell them the story about what happened. And they said, the Uncle Henry and Aunt Em, they said they were working very hard, and they were older people. But they said if they didn't take care of the chickens, that the chickens would die. So they had responsibilities. See, what is that telling the young people? You don't want to have to be like that. Come to the city where there's bright city lights. And you don't have to be under the auspices of your parents anymore. You can do what you want to do. You can be free to live a life that your parents would have protected you from living. See what I mean? See, also, you have that aspect about the farm. You had the protection. The females, the children were under the protection of the parents and the families and the community. There were no Jewish pedophiles around to do vile things to the children. But like I told you, as they're drawn away from the farm to institutions of learning, which will eventually get them to the city for the job, or for the women to get them directly to the city, so that they can be isolated from the herd, so to speak, and they can be taken down quite easily. So the farm was a protection. The farm also didn't have all kinds of newspapers and television to keep brainwashing you and turning you against your father, your heavenly father, Yahweh. There were many protections of the farm. So anyway, this is what it's showing. So Dorothy's bored. She has no friends there. She has a dog as a companion, which in many cases we see that with our women today, or even some of the men. This is because of the divisions that the Jew has caused. So instead of having friends, they have dogs as companions, and that's exactly what Dorothy had. Another thing I would note is that Auntie M bosses all the hands around in a manly fashion, and they obey. Of course, I understand that they're being paid, but the man is the one that's supposed to be bossing the hands around, not a female. So this also shows you the Jew. See, that's because, why is it? You ever notice how Italian wives, when they become 50, turn into these big bosses? And it's the same for the Jewesses? Well, we've already proven to you that many Sicilian Italians, or the mafioso Italians, are Jews. That's why. So they wanted us to be under the same thing. They want the woman to rule. It's time to end the patriarchy. It's the time for the female goddess to rule. And so this was an example. Now the children would be bossed around by Auntie M, no doubt, but not the hands around the farm. That was the man's duty. And so these things are shown to you as reality, and what they do is they contrive reality. Now, the hook-nosed Jewess who becomes the witch, she went to the sheriff and she got the law to give her permission to have the dog, Toto, destroyed. And she said if she didn't have her way, she claimed that she would take the farm away from Auntie M and Uncle Henry. You hearing what I'm saying? She said she would take the farm away if they didn't give her the dog to be destroyed. In other words, she'll sue them. You can certainly see that this is Jewry, can't you? Her name is Elmira Gulch, and she has a big hook nose. Okay, I began to think of this, and this is just the way I am. What is a gulch? You've heard of it before. You've heard of a gulch? A gulch is a deep, narrow ravine, especially one marking the course of a stream or torrent. You see, what it is it's a big ravine that was carved out by a torrential flow of violent water. What is a torrent? A stream of water flowing with great rapidity and violence. Two, a rushing, violent, or abundant, or and unceasing stream of anything. Three, a torrent of lava. A violent downpour of rain. A violent, tumultuous, or overwhelming flow. A torrent of abuse. So a gulch is created by a violent stream or torrent. That's your last name. Is that not interesting, ladies and gentlemen? Not only that, but Auntie M says to her that she knows that she owns half the county. Does that tell you she's got a hook nose and she owns half the county? Now, let me point out something, and this is in my article. This was a period in American history which was, I don't know if the Depression was over in 37, but it was still going on to a good point. I believe it was not over. This Depression was brought about by the Jews crashing the stock market in 1929 and transferring much wealth and property to themselves. They stole it from the white American people, and this continues to this day. I will remind you of something that happened in Bolshevik Russia. I told you they took the farms. The people were starving. And the Jews who were in control over there, the world was sending them trains full of food. Instead of giving it to the starving people because they wanted them to die, they were giving the people one potato per family per week. And they would come down your street and pick up the dead every day. They put this food into warehouses and did not give it to the people. Now, just in case you don't know, after the Jews crashed the stock market in 29 and transferred much wealth to themselves and property, other countries knew we were going through the Depression and began to send us food. What happened to that food here? Do you know how many people starved to death and died because of the Great Depression? They put the food in warehouses and made sure it didn't go to the American people. The Jews did it in Russia, and the Jews did it here. I want you to begin to think about that. We suffered something that we need not suffer. And our Christian brothers and sisters, our white brothers and sisters in Russia, suffered something they needed not suffer. There was plenty of food to feed those people. The culling of the white race has been going on for a long time. And the Jews are the ones behind it. There's no doubt of that in my mind. It is a proven fact. It is not an Illuminati or some secret families in the world who are satanic. Yes, they work with the Jews, some of them, but the Jews are responsible. They are at war with us, and they knew they were at war with us, but we didn't know it. And many of our people today still do not know about this war that has been going on since the garden, it was declared in the garden by Yahweh himself during his judgment of the serpent, Adam, and Eve. So, Toto escapes after the oh yeah, I want to mention too, something about the movie. Is this woman, Elmira Gulch, she's an ugly, ugly hook-nosed Jewess. And basically, she's very resentful of Dorothy's youth. And beauty. The beauty of youth. So she comes and gets Toto, and Toto escapes and comes back to Dorothy, who has decided to leave the farm and run away. So she walks down the dirt road, and as she crosses the bridge, she comes upon Professor Marvel's coach. What does it say on his coach? It says, Professor Marvel, acclaimed by the crowned heads of Europe. Let him read your past, present, and future in his crystal. And there we see the sun with rays, 8 rays emanating from it. And it says also juggling and sleight of hand. So she meets up with Professor Marvel, who is the Wizard of Oz and many other parts in the Emerald City. And you can see right away that he's a fraud. The children will know that he's a fraud. But here's what Professor Marvel teaches the children and Dorothy. Professor Marvel says he never does anything without consulting his crystal first. Notice that he's not looking to Yahweh for answers. He doesn't consult Yahweh first. He doesn't look up into the heavens and say, Yahweh, I do nothing without consulting you, which is what he should do, which is what we should be teaching the children of the future generations, and of course the adults of the current generation. So you see, this Eastern mysticism is being taught to the children through the film. And believe me, the children's guard is down. They've never seen anything like these things before. So you can see that they're teaching the children and how they shape the next generation. This is how it's done, ladies and gentlemen. This is how Hollywood, you wonder why today's generation is in the condition it's in? Just look at Hollywood. Look at the television, Talmud Vision. Look at the universities. This film is also teaching them to be dreamers and to follow your dreams as if your dreams were the most important thing in life. Think about it. I often say to people, well, what about the American dream? I said, you know what the problem with the American dream is? You have to be asleep to enjoy it. And then they accuse me, some of them, and say, well, you hate America. Think about what I'm saying. I'm not saying anything against America. Listen again. Do you know what the problem with the American dream is? You have to be asleep to enjoy it. In other words, if you're awake, like many of you are, ladies and gentlemen, dear listeners, or if you're awake like I am, you certainly can't enjoy the house and the 2 cars and the job and all, and the family with 3 children, right? Why can't you? Because when you find out that you don't own your house after all, that if you don't pay your taxes to the state, they'll auction your house off. So even if your house is paid off, you still don't own it. But if you're asleep, you don't know that. and your two cars that you're being killed with gasoline for no reason at all, that you're being killed with usury for no reason at all, that you're being killed with the so-called policing as they go out and they write tickets for nonsensical things that make no sense whatsoever. You know, like they sit around just waiting to catch somebody that's going 31 in a 30-mile-an-hour zone, or they're hiding behind a billboard, you know, trapping people, and, you know, or whatever it might be. Your inspection sticker might have overlapped, and oh no, it's we got to write you up a ticket. See, when you're asleep, you just keep accepting and consenting and going on with the program. But when you're awake, you realize about the usury. You realize about all that goes along with this. What about gasoline? What is going on with it? Why are we paying so much money for our heating oil when it used to be around 49 cents a gallon, 69 cents a gallon? Why are old people having to choose between eating and heating? Why would that be? What happened to the American dream? If you're asleep, you don't even know this is going on. But you and I know it's going on. So therefore, the problem with the American dream is you have to be asleep to enjoy it. Now, do you understand? So he says to Dorothy, to continue, this is the same crystal used by the priests of Isis and Osiris. I say Osiris. So this is the same crystal used by the priests of Isis and Osiris in the days of the pharaohs of Egypt. He tells Dorothy to close her eyes and get in tune with the infinite. Now, I wanted to know exactly what they meant by that, and I went out and I searched, and all of a sudden I came up with a book called In Tune with the Infinite by Ralph Waldo Trine. Wait till you see what this says. It's just theosophy again. There is a golden thread that runs through every religion in the world. There is a golden thread that runs through the lives and the teachings of to all the prophets, seers, sages, and saviors in the world's history, through the lives of all men truly great and lasting power. All that they have ever done or attained to has been done in full accordance with the law. Oh, really? What one has done, all may do. In other words, we're all God. We are all Christ's. Jesus wasn't, I can't think of that guy's name, Dr. something, it doesn't really matter, but he said he was on his way to becoming a God in the same way as Jesus Christ was on his way to becoming a God, which is a lie. Yeshua is like Yahweh in the flesh. He already is. He's the only God. He's not on his way to becoming a God. He is God. Big heavy set guy. I can't think of his name. So in other words, what all has done, what Jesus has done, all may do what he did. This same golden thread must enter into the lives of all who today, in this busy workaday world of ours, would exchange impotence for power, weakness and suffering for abounding health, and strength, pain, and unrest for perfect peace, poverty of whatever nature for fullness and plenty. Each is building their own world. We both build from within, hello, and we attract from without. Thought is the force with which we build. See, it's inside of you. The answers are inside of you. They always have been. You don't need to look to Yahweh. The thought is the force with which we build. for thoughts are forces. Like builds like, and like attracts alike. Let's do that again. Like builds like, and like attracts like. That's a hard one. In the degree that thought is spiritualized, does it become more subtle and powerful in its workings? This spiritualizing is in accordance with law and is within the power of all. Everything is worked out in the unseen before it is manifested in the seen, in the ideal before it's realized in the real. Hello. Now I'm going to have to, what did I tell you about ideal and real? I told you that idealism, like communism, when it translates to reality, it doesn't translate well at all. The theory of evolution ideally sounds good, but does not translate in reality. But he says it does. In the spiritual, before it shows forth in the material. The realm of the unseen is the realm of cause. The realm of the seen is the realm of effect. The nature of effect is always determined and conditioned by the nature of its cause. To point out the great facts in connection and the great laws underlying the workings of the interior spiritual thought forces, to point them out so simply and so clearly that even a child can understand, is the author's aim. To point them out so simply and so clearly that all can grasp them, that all can take them and infuse them into everyday life, so as to mold it in all its details in accordance with that what they would have it, is his purpose. That life can be thus molded by them is not a matter of mere speculation or theory with him, but is a matter of positive knowledge. There is a divine sequence running throughout the universe. Hello! Within and above and below the human will incessantly works the divine. Oh, the human will incessantly works the divine will. So you can see that this is theosophy, right? I'll finish it off. It only take me a second here, a minute. To come into harmony with it and to thereby with all higher laws and forces. Remember what it says about the Antichrist, that he will love the God of forces. He will not love the God of his ancestors. To come then into league and to into the chain of this wonderful sequence. This is the secret of all success. This is to come into the possession of unknown riches, into the realization of undreamed of powers. To come into the realization of undreamed of powers. Now, he's saying that to know what he's teaching is to come into the possession of unknown riches. Now, this is, again, an imitation of Yahweh's wisdom. Where wisdom is more precious than rubies? Can you see these filthy, filthy, demonic people? And they continue and continue and continue on with this nonsense. So Ralph Waldo Trine says, within yourself lies the cause of whatever enters into your life. To come into the full realization of your own awakened inner powers is to be able to condition your life in exact accord with what you would have it to be, or whatever, would have it to be. Okay? So you don't need God. This is theosophy. This is the philosophy that this movie is teaching the adults and the children of the future generations. And as this movie becomes and stays beloved, it will teach all the future generations. So next we see Dorothy, and behind her we see an upside-down star. The upside-down star of the goat of Mendes is in the background. Now, we know that the children can see that this adult is clearly a fraud, and the they can probably see that. I know the adults can. He is portrayed as a kind old man who is lying to get her to go home. See, he's lying to Dorothy that he's not actually seeing anything inside the crystal. He stole a picture while she was getting in tune with the infinite and closing her eyes. He stole a picture of Auntie M, or took it, out of her bag. So then he began to tell her things like, oh, Auntie M has a dress. She looks upset and all that kind of stuff. So what it teaches the children is that this kind old man, even though he looks to the crystal and he has nothing to do with God and he has skulls and Egyptian items and all kinds of things in his little trailer and he lies about things, the ends justify the means. See, he's trying to get Dorothy to go home so that Dorothy will be happy that she's home and also Auntie M will be glad to know where she is. So the ends, even though you have to lie and deceive, the ends justify the means. Now that upside down star is shown in the Pentagon. So I believe this upside down star also represents Satan's 5-point plan. I'm going to explain to you what Satan's 5-point plan is. And it's a pipe dream for he and his followers, the devil. I'll tell you what the 5-point plan is in just a second. See, we can see this star at the Pentagon. When they show the picture of the Pentagon, you see what looks like the Chrysler symbol. It's flat on the bottom, and it's got 5 sides. Now, if you open that up, if you take the star's arms down, open them all out wide, you will see the Goat of Mendes, the upside-down star, which is the 5-point plan, Satan's 5-point plan. And here it is, ladies and gentlemen, the 5-point plan. He's a very positive thinker, this devil, as well. We see this 5-point plan outlined in the book of Isaiah, chapter 14. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, which is really Halel, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? Now listen, here comes the 5-point plan starting in, of course, verse 13. For thou hast said in thine heart, 1, I will ascend into heaven. This is what Lucifer or Halel has said. 1, I will ascend into heaven. 2, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. 3, I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. 4, I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. And 5, I will be like the Most High. That's Satan's, or Lucifer, or Halel's 5-point plan. But none of that shall happen. I will also point out to you in verse 13, where he says his 3rd point, I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north, which is where Yahweh sits. I told you that they keep the north side of the lodge dark, because that is where Yahweh sits upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. Think about it. Now, the right side up star stands for the devil's offspring, the Jews. It's called the Star of Amalek. We see this star everywhere, especially on our war machines. Notice it's on Russia's war machines as well. Even though the Jews have also taken on what I call the Mark of the Beast, the so-called Star of David, it's not the Star of David at all. It's a satanic symbol that has been used in witchcraft for thousands of years, and it usually has a circle around it. And as long as you stay outside the circle, you are protected. I believe that is. And so the demons come up through the floor or come down from wherever, or and they reside in the circle. And as long as you stay outside the circle, you are protected. I'm pretty sure that's the way that works. So, we see that the upside-down star means something for Satan, which is the five-point plan, the goat of Mendes. And we see that the right-side-up star, the one we see all over our flag, the one we see all over our war machines, is called the Star of Amalek. Yahweh hates Amalek and said he would be at war with Amalek from generation to generation. Amalek came from Edom, came from Esau. He is the progeny of Esau. Now, I'm certainly not going to be able to finish this today, but I really like what's going on. I don't think so, anyway. Just a note here. There is a tornado coming. Now, Dorothy has gone home, and there's a tornado coming, which is shown to be another negative aspect about the farm. So we see the portrayal of the farm as dull, simple, dangerous, boring place where people have to work hard for a living and have no time for dreams. You see? So if you want to be a dreamer and follow your dreams, young boy, young man, young woman, leave the farm and come to the city. Come and see the bright city lights. Yes. So she is now in her dream and far away from the farm. And the tornado has brought the house up and it lands. In the whirlwind, she sees the Jewess with the hook nose is now still riding her bicycle and is transformed into the Wicked Witch of the West. And she's riding on a broom. Now the film, when she opens the door, the film is fully colored and vibrant. Because she's away from the farm, you see. Life away from the farm is much more exciting. It's much more vibrant. It's much more alive. As opposed to the dead farm. Here, Dorothy is recognized as a hero. And everybody pays attention to her. Something our women really desire. Correct? I mean, our women today will color their hair purple. They'll wear crazy things. They'll say crazy things, anything to get attention. So Dorothy meets with a so-called good witch, which, of course, is nonsense. There is no such thing as a good witch. But that's what they're teaching our children, you see. That there are bad witches and there are good witches. She asks Dorothy, are you a good witch or a bad witch? Yeah. Obviously, she says later that only bad witches are ugly. So she must have known the answer that Dorothy wasn't ugly. She was just asking Dorothy the question. So she told Dorothy that she was a witch. You see? Witchcraft. They're teaching the children witchcraft. That there are good witches. And that only the bad witches are ugly. And have these big Jew hook noses. Yes. And so they sing that she fell from a star. And that star was called Kansas. Glinda, the so-called white witch, good witch, continually tells Dorothy that she's a witch. And she tells her the only answer to her problem on getting home is to go to see the wizard. Now, a wizard is also a witch. And when Dorothy asks her, where should I begin? Glinda tells her, well, what I tell people is the same thing. When anyone asks me this question, I always say, well, you begin at the beginning. Makes pure sense to me. She tells her to go to the Emerald City. Tells her to follow the yellow brick road, which is, at the start of it, an ancient goddess emblem symbolizing the universal pattern of growth in nature. It's a witchcraft sign. What it looks like is it looks like, what do they call those rolls where they go around and around and around? You eat them there. I don't know the name of the roll right now, but it starts off at a point and goes to the left, of course, to the left. And it goes around and around and around and around, okay? This is an old, ancient goddess emblem symbolizing the universal pattern of growth in nature. It's a witchcraft sign. So when the Wicked Witch of the West shows up, and she can do nothing to Dorothy at this time, she disappears and with a flaming fire. This is proof that she is one of the children of the flame, as I have told you about before. Remember, the children of the flame have this saying, we came from the flame and we return to the flame. And indeed, they truly shall. You must also be aware of this, is like the Freemasons and New Age idiots, Dorothy and her four companions are on a quest. The Emerald City is light, and they are seeking something from the wizard. The Scarecrow seeks intellect. The garden, just shades of the garden. The Scarecrow seeks intellect. The Tin Man seeks more feelings, which is what the devil and his offspring, the Jews, use against us all the time. Should you be seeking more feelings? Or should you control the feelings that you have already? The lion, he seeks courage, which can be the need to be a hero, to receive praise, to be exalted. And Dorothy wants to go home. Now, the reason for it being the Emerald City is chiefly because that is Satan's favorite color. No, it's not red, as you may have thought. It is green. Notice that the witch is green as well. The children of the flame, the child of the flame. So the Scarecrow wants to get a brain, yet he does all the thinking in the movie, which is exactly what theosophy teaches. What you sought is already within you, Mr. Scarecrow. You don't need God, Yahweh himself, to have knowledge or wisdom. Look within yourself, because it's already within you. Also, you should seek a wizard's counsel or Lucifer to become illuminated and intellectualized. You can see right there how that thought is being interjected throughout the picture. Now listen to this, which is very interesting. It's the Tin Man sings, "I'd be friends with the sparrows and the boy who shoots the arrows if I only had a heart," right? Well, Cupid is a representation of Nimrod shooting arrows at Yahweh from the top of the Tower of Babel. Did you know that? So the Tin Man says he'd be friends with the sparrows and the boy who shoots the arrows if he only had a heart. As the quest continues, they begin to fear, and then comes the lion who also joins the quest. Now, what's very interesting in this movie, what we see next is we see the witch and her monkey servant, which is shades of today, ladies and gentlemen. The Jews, the hook-nosed Jews, or witches, or whatever you want to call them, have always used the monkeys as their servants. So she says at this point, while she's looking in her crystal ball, and you can see that she's not a fraud, because you actually see the things in her crystal ball that she talks about, which is what the children will think as well, that the old man was a fraud, but she was the real thing. She says she will poison those on the quest with something that's attractive to the eye and soothing to the smell, which is poppies. The witch says poppies will put them to sleep. Now, I have a thought for you. Think about this. Is the television not attractive to the eye? And you watch it at home, a place where you have attractive smells in the kitchen. And the combination of this puts you to sleep. And it has put the world to sleep. See, they began to fall asleep, and the Scarecrow says, "In this is a spell." The Scarecrow, who can't think. The Scarecrow says, "This is a spell. That's what it is. That's what this is." And he is exactly right. We are under the spell of Hollywood, the spell of Talmud vision, the spell of the media, the spell of the Jewish version of Christianity with its Jewish Jesus, the spell of the devil and his literal offspring, the Jews. My advice to you, ladies and gentlemen, has been the same all the way through. Turn it all off. If you do, you will awaken from this spell that you have been under for decades. I'd like to mention that the Jews brag about this in the book, An Empire of Their Own, how the Jews invented Hollywood. They claim they put a spell on America, and they certainly have. So as they come out of the woods, we hear a song. You're out of the woods, you're out of the dark, you're out of the night. Step into the sun, step into the light, right? You remember that one? Keep straight ahead for the most glorious place on the face of the earth or the sky. Are you listening? Hold on to your breath. Hold on to your heart. Hold on to your hope. March up to the gate and bid it open. You're out of the woods. You're out of the dark. You're out of the night. Step into the sun. Step into the light. March up to the gate and bid it open. So something I would point out here is very obvious, and that is why Satan's kingdom is the most glorious place on the face of the earth or the sky. Step into his light. Isn't it odd that Yahweh's kingdom is not the most glorious place on the face of the earth or the sky? Don't seek him for anything, right? Great message for the youth. You can be a witch instead and seek Lucifer's kingdom and his intellectual light. He will give you a heart, a brain, a home, and some courage. You see, we're living in an upside-down world with affirmative action leaders, affirmative action governments, affirmative action people, and their affirmative action so-called God. Just like our world, people play multiple parts in the Emerald City, and they do it without the public being aware of it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we got a good ways through, but there is much more to learn about the Wizard of Oz, and we shall continue next week. This is a very interesting subject, and you can now see what they're teaching your children and what they taught you. You see that it is juxtaposed to God. You see that it is against him. You see that he is not even included within it, not mentioned. Ladies and gentlemen, I will stand with Yahweh, and I hope you will too. These filthy devils are teaching people the wrong things, and they are going to pay a healthy price for doing this. So are the teachers of the Judeo-Christian religion, which is the Jewish version of Christianity with a false Jewish Jesus. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and until next time, study to show thyself approved.